This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In a groundbreaking judgment, the Supreme Court of Canada ruled on April 15, 2016, that mandatory minimum sentencing for certain drug offenses violates the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. This case challenged a section of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, which creates a mandatory minimum one-year jail term for drug possession in certain situations. West Coast Leaf, a Vancouver-based nonprofit organization that uses the law to further women's equality, was one of the interveners in the case. West Coast Leaf argued that charter challenges to mandatory minimum sentencing must be viewed through the lens of equality. By removing a judge's ability to consider the whole of the circumstances, mandatory minimums result in sentences that do not fit the crime. Fairness and equality in sentencing is a woman's issue, because one-size-fits-all sentencing ignores the different and disproportionately negative ways in which women are impacted by jail sentences.
I spoke with Raji Mangat, who is the Director of Litigation at West Coast Leaf, earlier this week. Tell us about the case Lloyd v. R. 2015, which prompted this recent decision. What's the background of this case?
This is a challenge to the constitutionality of one provision in the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, and that section of the act allows for a one-year mandatory minimum sentence for individuals who are convicted of possession of certain categories of drugs for the purposes of trafficking drugs. So Mr. Lloyd is an individual from the downtown east side of Vancouver who was found in possession of a certain quantity of heroin, which then made him subject to this mandatory minimum sentence of 1 year when he was convicted of possession of those drugs for the purposes of trafficking. Mr. Lloyd's counsel brought a challenge to the constitutionality of this provision, of this mandatory minimum 1 year sentence, under a couple of different sections of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. He said that it violated Section 7 of the Charter and Section 12 of the Charter. Section 7 deals with life, liberty, and security of the person, and Section 12 is the right not to be subject to cruel and unusual punishment. And the decision that came out last week, Friday, by the Supreme Court of Canada agreed with Mr. Lloyd that this one-year mandatory minimum sentence for this very broad offense of possessing drugs for the purposes of trafficking was in fact unconstitutional under Section 12 of the Charter. And the reason why I say that this is a very broad offense is because the definition of trafficking in the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act and also in the Criminal Code is very broad. It's not just what we think of when we think of trafficking, like a big drug cartel or that sort of thing. It also includes individuals like Mr. Lloyd who are drug addicted and who are sharing drugs with other individuals on the downtown east side who are also drug addicted individuals. And so just the mere fact of sharing or giving somebody some of these drugs, someone who may in fact suffer from an addiction and suffer from an illness, that alone would constitute trafficking. And that is how Mr. Lloyd ended up in the circumstances that brought the case all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada.
Was the legislation that was being challenged part of the former Harper government's tough on crime agenda that we heard so much about a few years ago?
Yes, absolutely. So this one-year mandatory minimum sentence was enacted by the former Conservative government back in 2010 in their Bill C-10, which was the big omnibus crime bill. This was the first time in at least, I believe, two decades where we had a mandatory minimum sentence for a drug offense. We have had mandatory minimum sentences in our criminal code for many, many, many years, practically since the beginning of the criminal code, at least in respect of very serious offenses like murder. But the fact that there was now going to be a one-year mandatory minimum sentence for this particular drug offense was quite controversial, especially as it was happening in a time when the United States, which was is known for having many mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenses, was backing away from using them because they were recognizing that they don't actually work and cause a lot of harm in various communities where, for instance, such as the downtown East Side, where many individuals suffer from intersecting disadvantages, including the fact that they may have drug addiction. So this was very much part of what the Harper government had put forward as part of their tough on crime agenda.
Now, West Coast Leaf was one of several interveners in the case at the Supreme Court, and you argued from 3 points, I gather. One had to do with equality, another with responsiveness, and a third had to do with consequences. Tell us a bit more about each of those points.
So our perspective as a women's rights organization is always from the perspective of equality. And what we had argued in this case is that when the Supreme Court of Canada looks at any of these charter rights and freedoms, they need to do so through the lens of equality, because equality is kind of a fundamental and underlying value that informs how the court should be looking at all of the rights that we have as individuals under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And so that first argument was really that the court needs to view the Section 7 and Section 12 arguments that were being raised in this case through the lens of equality. And then our second argument was that the court needs to be really responsive to the broad range of conduct and the various types of individuals who are captured by mandatory minimum sentencing. So what mandatory minimum sentencing does is it takes away from the sentencing judge the ability to look at all of the circumstances of the particular person that's come before them, who they need to provide an appropriate sentence for. And so when you take that power away from the sentencing judge by fixing an arbitrary floor for what the sentence has to be, can be no lower than that floor, what you're really doing is you're sort of taking away the judge's ability to be responsive to the particular circumstances of the person before them. And that is very much part of what sentencing judges have to do in order to ensure that we have appropriate fit sentences that actually fit the crime and fit the circumstances of the individual. So that was the sort of the main part of our second argument. And then the third argument that we put forward at the Supreme Court of Canada was that in looking at what the impact of individuals are, we have to address that there are different and disproportionately disadvantageous consequences for particular individuals in our criminal justice system. And our focus at West Coast Leaf is on women's experiences. And we know that women both come to these kinds of low-level drug offenses in a different way than do men, and also women have a different experience of incarceration as do men. And that experience can be can result in a disproportionate impact on women, because often women are still in our society child care providers, primary child care providers, and often by being incarcerated in one of the two female prisons in BC, they will be far away from their families and from their children, and that's going to have a differential impact on them, along with the fact that there are all sorts of reasons why women may become involved in trafficking, and those reasons have to do with the different impact of how women are involved in the criminal justice system. Women tend to be more likely to be drug mule or have the drug mule role, which puts them far more visible to law enforcement efforts, as well as makes them more likely to be arrested in these kinds of stings where they're looking at the individuals on the ground who are engaging in this very broad definition of trafficking. So those were sort of the three prongs of our argument. We very much wanted to see the Supreme Court of Canada look at the whole of the circumstances and consider the equality rights of men and women as they are different in the criminal justice system. Unfortunately, the court did not go there in its decision. The decision was made entirely on the basis of a violation of Section 12 of the Charter, and the court did not take the opportunity to provide some more explanation about how the equality rights of individuals should be addressed in looking at what is an appropriate sentence. So we were hopeful that maybe the court would go there in this case. Unfortunately, we didn't see the court go there, but we are pleased with how the court ruled on the mandatory minimum sentence itself.
The Supreme Court's ruling was described, at least in some of the media I read about it, as groundbreaking. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the ruling itself, and maybe tell us more about the implications of the ruling going forward?
Yeah, so one of the things that is quite interesting in this judgment is the Supreme Court really kind of takes the mandatory minimum sentence a bit to task and says, well, hey, you know, we recognize the reality that these sentences apply to offenses committed in a variety of ways under a broad range of circumstances and apply to a broad range of people. And so the court said, you know, to Parliament, like, if you want to enact mandatory minimum sentences, you have to narrow the reach of these sentences to catch only those offenders who actually merit that mandatory minimum sentence. So that was one interesting piece that came out of this judgment. Another thing that the court said was, you know, in many other jurisdictions similar to Canada, what they have in their criminal code is this idea of a safety valve or a residual discretion, where even if there's a mandatory minimum on the books, the judges still have the ability to go to do something different from that mandatory minimum if they think there are sort of special circumstances in the case. Canada does not have that kind of special power or safety valve for judges, and so where there's a mandatory minimum sentence, unless it is shown to be unconstitutional, the judge must apply it. And so the court, again, provided this as another possibility for how we may be able to have mandatory minimum sentences that wouldn't necessarily result in an unconstitutional application, because a judge would still have the option to do something other than the mandatory minimum sentence. So there were some interesting signals in the judgment that signals to Parliament about, you know, how they're seeing more and more of these kinds of challenges, and often, as you said earlier, you know, many of these were part of the sort of tough on crime agenda, and we're seeing that as these cases make their way up to the Supreme Court of Canada, the fact that this discretion is being taken away from judges is often very problematic from the perspective of the court. And so here the Supreme Court did make some statements, some general statements about how these kinds of Parliament may want to make some changes to the way that they make legislation around mandatory minimums. The court did not go so far as to say that mandatory minimum sentences in and of themselves are unconstitutional. So that was sort of an interesting balance is happening there, where the court's providing some guidance maybe to Parliament, and we'll have to see if Parliament picks up on that guidance in the future sessions where they are going to be debating future criminal sentencing provisions. We were hoping that the court would provide some perspective on how equality rights should be part of this calculation, that these rights need to be viewed with the lens of equality, and so we were disappointed that that did not happen in this case, but of course we'll continue to work on this issue and continue to work on all issues that affect female offenders in our criminal justice system.
Raji Mangat, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Raji Mangat is the Director of Litigation at West Coast Leaf. You can find out more about the work of West Coast Leaf, along with details about the minimum sentencing case, online at westcoastleaf.org.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.